A bridge to new voices. Inside Impact Cookeville, today in the Upper Cumberland. Impact Cookeville's mission, to build community and seek to positively impact those who are socially marginalized through inclusion. We go inside those words as we talk to Cindy Schumann, director of Impact Cookeville. Around the community, adventure begins at your library. That's the theme of the Art Circle Public Library's summer reading program. It kicks off officially Monday. Patty Dalton of the Children's Library says it's time to get your kids signed up. You can find out more information at artcirclelibrary.info. The summer reading program runs June 1st through July 22nd. Cindy Schumann, thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
How did Impact Cookeville come to be?
Well, the organization originated with some African Americans. They would get together and talk about some of the needs that the African Americans have, whether it's food or hair products or whatever it is. And because there's such a small market share, not many or any places in Cookeville really could accommodate some of the things they wanted. So they'd get together and put a list together, and somebody would volunteer to go to Knoxville or Nashville. And it was primarily men who started that Saturday morning porch sitting. So it was called Impact Leadership Cookeville, Impact Leadership for Men. But they sat there one day and realized that a cumulative between them and the collaborative between them, that they had resources and talents really to offer the community, not just their collective shopping. And so they recognized that being in the community and honoring African Americans every year who have contributed to the development of Cookeville in some form or fashion was something that wasn't really being addressed in any other venue. And that's how they started. And it's just been such a classy approach to, and I'm just going to say, integration. Because if they had no means of being integrated into boards, city hall, city council, the chamber, airport board, the hospital board, this was a way of at least acknowledging and recognizing the African Americans like the Bohannons, who have really contributed a lot to Cookeville, to the development of Cookeville and the development of the African American community. Now, while it's only 2% and has not grown much, they recognize that integrating into a mostly Caucasian community had its challenges.
And we'll talk about some of those as we move through the course of our conversation this hour. How would you describe the mission of the organization as it is configured today?
Well, it hasn't changed much, but the difference is that they came to me, we had a conversation one day about how could they have more awareness, more, how could they reach the community more? How could they impact the community more? No pun intended, but, and I said, having moved here from the north, what I recognize when I talk to people is that they don't really define diversity or inclusion in the same way that I would. And maybe we need to educate to integrate. So the adult leadership program kind of was birthed out of that. So Impact Leadership has its separate mission than Cookeville Impact. while we are absolutely related, so our mission is Impact Leadership is an inclusive organization, develops and encourages civic-minded leaders to actively participate in the betterment of the community and affect positive social change for all. And at first, diversity and inclusion seem to have the face of, and especially after the George Floyd incident, seem to have the face of race. And I'm telling you, it is not at all. And that's a very narrow approach to diversity and inclusion. And in the Impact Leadership program, what I even experienced was I would have atheists in the program who would say to me, you know, living in the Bible Belt, when you're sitting at a table, especially like at a banquet, and you're sitting next to a family of faith or people of faith, and they ask you, well, what church do you go to? The look or the indifference is noticeable. So I had, and every year I have atheists that go through the program. I have atheists. I have homosexuals and transgenders, and I have Muslims and Christians and elderly and, you know, young professionals. So diversity and inclusion are a broad spectrum. And in fact, I make it a point to show the class that each and every one of them contributes to diversity, because in one of the profiles, one of the assessments that we do, it shows them that 1 in 33.5 million people are going to have the same top 5 markers that they have. And those markers are their strengths. That's the Gallup Strength Finder. And when you look at it from that perspective, we all contribute to diversity in such a way that a white male property owner is not just the majority. Each one of everyone contributes to diversity.
Let's come back to that as we visit with Cindy Schumann. We're talking about Impact Cookeville and the programs it offers. We'll tell you how you can find out more as we continue as well. Cindy Schumann is our guest. Just before, you were talking about this whole issue of diversity, and there is that tendency to think black, white. And yet, just in the course of the last several weeks, we've talked about the growing Hispanic population that is moving into the Upper Cumberland, double-digit populations now in multiple communities of our region. We've talked about, for example, at Tennessee Tech, where the Asian population continues to grow, and those from that area. So I guess it is easy sometimes just to kind of boil it down to black, white, and it's so much more than that.
Yes, it is. I was actually blown away. We did our 5-year data collection of male and female, age, ethnicity, and living in a community that is 2% African American, after 5 years, we had reached 31.9% of our class participants were African American. 10.1% were Hispanic, 5.8% were Eastern Indian, and 52.2% were Caucasian. But I was not only very proud of that, but the numbers don't lie. We are reaching, and the community is becoming a very diverse community.
It's interesting because, again, when you think about African Americans, and I mean, let's be honest, you moved here, I moved here, and when you come here, that it is noticeable.
It is.
And yet, when you talk to, you know, name a leader in our community who is an African American leader as well, and they will tell you that there's not overt racism here. It's just that you just don't see a lot of people.
Maybe indifference. I know that coming from the Chicago area, when I first recognized in 2011 when I moved here, I'd go to civic events downtown and wherever. And there weren't many African-Americans who showed up. I started asking some of my African-American friends that I'd made, why aren't they there? And when you talk to people and introduce programs like ours with an emphasis on the underrepresented communities, you get a mixed bag of emotions. People who say they're not racist, but that's not really what you hear. Coming from Chicago, race relations are not a conversation, they're a way of life. But here, it has to be a conversation. And so I think we're a little behind the times in that regard. But I heard all kinds of things that made me realize people needed to be educated.
Broaden our conversation beyond the Upper Cumberland. Why has diversity become such a catchphrase, such a lightning rod, in your opinion?
Well, it's interesting because what I think happened, in particular the George Floyd incident, but the Michael Brown and, you know, all the different seeming injustices towards African Americans were just highlighted. So I read a book generated by a organization in England that had multiple sciences, and American Express and Sun Oil and a couple other American companies hired them back in the late 80s, early 90s to more or less project what the economic opportunities, how they would change, what they would be, what it would look like in 20 years. And I happened to pick that book up and read it, and what shocked me was one of the comments it made about the country kind of coalesced and came together over civil rights. And the book projected that that would be the only time we would be as united about that issue, and then it would disintegrate. And I thought, how could they write this? The book was published in 1992. How could they write this? And now here we are, 2024. And yes, I think race relations certainly has its ups and downs. But 2024, we should be well past some of those injustices and discriminations and implicit biases. We should be well past that, and we're not. So why did we fall apart? And I think affirmative action didn't help. It's interesting, in class with adult cohort, we do have deep dive topics. We talk about some very controversial things, and critical race theory is one of them. And because of the polarization politically, you also have narratives that people just kind of fall into depending on their political position. And a narrative about critical race theory that was very negative has also impacted people's perception of the African-American experience. I asked someone what they thought of critical race theory, and their remark was, it's evil, run the other way. And I thought to myself, right then and there, that the adult cohort in this community, if they can't define something, they can't intelligently discuss it. Don't tell me it's evil, run the other way. Tell me something that you absolutely know about it that makes you have a feeling or an opinion. And so when we talked in class, this even just this last year, and we have a diverse group ethnically, and we bring up critical race theory, and inevitably somebody has a reaction because of affirmative action. And so what's nice about impact leadership, because we have a structure and a format of transformative thinking, we create a learning environment that is safe and brave. And so everyone is free. If they get to that point, they come in as a group and they leave as a team, you know. But when they get to that point of feeling safe and brave, they'll talk about their experiences. And so we can share perspectives. And I think that it has helped immensely. I know when Impact Leadership started, and the leaders of Cookeville Impact, and we sat down with Mayor Randy Porter, and he said, and I didn't even have this vision, but he said, in 10 years, Impact Leadership will have made an effective change in the community. But I didn't see it that way. I thought of class structure, and I was thinking in the immediate. But now in hindsight, when I look at this, and I think, well, so we've had an adult cohort of people where we show them transformative thinking. Your perspective is your passport, or it's your prison. We show them that. We show them how their perspective, you know, many adults think, I have a career that I'm successful at. I'm raising children. I have my belief system. And they think that nothing is going to change their opinion. But we show them how vulnerable really our opinions are, how our perspectives have been indoctrinated or shaped, and they can be so wrong. And once we show them that, they're much more open and receptive to learning some of these other changes.
On the other hand, especially I think you hear this, I'm sure you do, from those of an older generation who say, you know, I can get on board with that we made the changes that we made in civil rights and we moved that forward. And maybe I can get on board with, you know, the 70s movement towards women's rights. Maybe I can get on board in the 1970s with the rights of homosexuals. But you hear this all the time, that now it's like, and again, this is not my opinion, but this is what you hear, that we can't ever stop dividing ourselves into smaller groups, and smaller groups feeling like they need to have a seat at the table. And you hear people of an older generation say, you know, where does it stop? Where does it end? What happened to being an American first versus having these subgroups?
Well, that is, I think there's multiple things in there that you just said. So to unpack it a little bit, I think one of the reasons Donald Trump became a wave across this country is because it seemed he gave the voiceless a voice. And I think it's true that people become discontent when they don't feel they belong. Now, we know from brain science that belonging is one of the three pedestals in the amygdala that needs to be safeguarded by the time you're 11 years old. So if you feel you belong, you feel like you have a place. And I think a lot of people underrepresented don't feel like they belong or have a place. And so that's something that leaders are starting to have to address. If they want followers, you know, a leader can't even be a leader without followers. So if they want followers, they're learning that underrepresented groups are just as important. That's one part of what I think you were saying, I think. Another is age and the difference between the baby boomers and the millennials. While it's huge, the culture is what has changed, not so much people. And if we can look at those cultural changes, it's easier to cross the bridge.
Because we're all shaped by our culture.
Yes, yes. So the baby boomer was a culture of hands-on and do. Millennials are a culture of technology. And the differences, too. So Americans first. You know, I grew up with my grandfather, the World War II generation, where it was God, country, family. And that was a mentality.
And in that order.
Right. And with baby boomers, there might not be a God. And certainly country is global now. And family. Well, in that mix somehow was the idea of getting your work done, pulling up your bootstraps, that kind of thing. And millennials want more time to smell the roses, to enjoy life, to they have different priorities than what were set in the 40s and 50s. So working across multi-generational and across the cultural differences, it's so eye-opening. I am the beneficiary of what I do because I learn so much from the cohorts.
Do you think we still have, and we'll get back to impact after this question, but do you think we still have an American culture?
Absolutely. People come here and it's always the American dream, you know, own property, own a house, have a job. In one of our segments, we talk about poverty. And the reason I can say this is because we do a segment on poverty is not a lack of character. It's a lack of cash. It seems that the American dream is very capitalistic oriented. But in that capitalistic orientation are all the freedoms that this country does provide as well. And so many come here wanting both the American dream as a freedom as well as an opportunity. But I think the fact that the world is becoming more global, that American dream, quote unquote, can also be found in other places.
Cindy Schumann is our guest as we talk about diversity and inclusion and specifically the work of Impact. We'll come back to talk about that as we continue. With Cindy Schumann, you have talked a couple of times about the classes, about the cohort. So how does Impact take this goal of being more inclusive and, in essence, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but training the next group of leaders in whatever that may be? How do you go about doing that?
Well, One of the things that's important to us is the difference between transactional and transformative. And a transformative opportunity or environment has four elements that have to be there: functional, emotional, social, and aspirational. And what's important about the aspirational part, for us it was the aspiration of educating to understand diversity and inclusion, educating for inclusion or for integration. And so the aspiration is kind of the driving force. Then in fostering that, there's a methodology. And the methodology includes the individual is considered, the intellectual stimulation has to be there, inspirational motivation, idealized influences, and imagining other roles. And what's interesting about imagining other roles is that if you think about what an actor, the craft of acting, it's a remarkable endeavor because they can evoke these profound emotions through their skills. And what it is they're able to empty themselves and become someone else. Apparently, research has suggested that only about 25% of people can naturally develop that capacity. But while we go through the cohort in a transformative thinking style, we continually impress on them with experience that their perspective is either their passport or it's their prison. And when we can produce perspectives that blow them away or show them, oh gosh, my perspective is what I am, not what everybody else is, then they're more receptive to coming out of the program with a broader sense of transformative thinking. And our leaders in a contemporary world now, not so much, early leaders were believed to be born leaders or influential people. But today in the contemporary world of leadership, leaders have to be skilled and trained. So it does make a difference if they recognize the idea of servant leadership, of course, because when you take into account other people's perspectives, it's not ego, it's not so self-centered. And when you're not self-centered, you're more servant-oriented. So contemporary leaders are under a lot more pressure. And we can see, I think, when you talk about some of the age differences, we can see that primarily in over 65 leaders, that it's still the old dogma, not the new concept of contemporary leaders.
The hammers and nails, how do you actually do this in terms of classes? And you have a class basically every year that you bring a group of leaders through?
We do. We have a class from August to May, one day a month, and it's all day. It'd be a weekday so that some of the field trip, so to speak, would be able to be accommodated. But in the classroom, they have a Myers-Briggs assessment. They have the Gallup StrengthFinder assessment. They learn nonprofit board expectations, because what's important to us is that the Pew report indicated that retention of talent comes in two ways in a community: good jobs or being involved in the community. we can't provide jobs. We can provide means for them to be involved in the community. So we have a nonprofit day. We have 46 nonprofits sometimes that show up, and it's a two-way get to know each other. The cohort, now having been trained in nonprofit board positions, can learn about the different nonprofits and decide, well, gee, I kind of have a passion for Habitat or Helping Hands or Clean Commission. And if I have a passion and interest in that and they have an interest in me, then we can work together and we get them involved in the community. We also have the diversity, equity, inclusion awareness. We have a lot of telling their own stories, sharing their own experiences. We also do community efforts like mock county commission. We go to a city council meeting. We'll go to the Justice Center and learn about our judicial system. All those things to learn about the community, to make sure people can talk intelligently about what's going on in Cookeville, not just the narrative.
So this is, I mean, you're investing yourself to do this.
We do a lot of deep dive topics. When I talk about creating a learning environment, it's not just a safe place, it's a brave place. We talk about, like I said, critical race theory, war with China, abortion, education in Tennessee, Christian nationalism, poverty, nuclear weaponry, cultural indoctrination, affirmative action. And we also do, along with the Myers-Briggs and the Gallup, SMART goal setting, because I think it's always a nice reminder to reaffirm goals or set new ones. But I think the interesting thing about being a transformative program is that in the very beginning, everybody thinks their opinion or their world knowledge is a learned experience. It's an adult opinion. So there's two books that I have relied on very heavily. Colin Woodard's book, American Regionalism. So he divides the country up in 11 regions, and I give them a paragraph about each region. And I say, pick out which region is ours. And it is undeniable. They all get that right. And when you read those 11 paragraphs and you see how different we are as a country, we are not, even though we're United States, we're not united regionally. There is great regionalism. The other book that I've relied on heavily is Hans Rosling, Factfulness. And I give them the factfulness quiz. And when they all fail that, they have to sit there and say, oh, well, I do have a grade school perspective of some of these global conditions. And when you are able to show the cohort that their perspectives might be outdated, they're much more vulnerable or willing to say, well, what else don't I know? So it works well in a transformative thinking program.
Before we run out of time, is there a way that we measure success in inclusion and diversity?
I think so. I think there is a way to measure. Everything has measurable matrix, right? So I think one of the things that you look for from a leadership program that the community should look for is how many of the graduates are being invested in the community. How many boards are they serving on or committees? Where do you see them coming out from a transformative program to recognize I contribute to this community One of the other ways is maybe leadership, elected leadership, political positions, helping to collaborate and unify what has become so polarized. And so we also offered a class, Political Pathway, where we showed those participants how you can become on the ballot, you know, a candidate for and these different positions, and where you find what those responsibilities are for those different positions. So we encouraged local people to run for county commission and city council and
school board.
And, yeah. So I think there are measurable metrics. I think what I always measure is at the end of the cohort, how they have become a team. They stay connected. They continue to talk. They don't want it to end. And that just fills me. When they all say, we don't want this to end. I mean, they've just gone through a 10-month learning process that they probably didn't think they would learn anything.
And they've come out stronger for it.
Yes.
Cindy Schumann and the work of Impact. Thank you for educating us today.
Thank you so much for having us.